Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another night of Full Spectrum Radio. I am Matt, and with me, as always, is Dennis. What's going on, man?
Sorry, I'm typing. What? I was texting. What?
We're live on. You're live on the air on a radio show.
Crap, man. Look, man, I'm texting here. Why are you bothering me? I'm texting. Look, I'm driving down the interstate, and I'm texting. I've got enough shit going on. Why are you bothering me?
First-time caller, first-time listener.
Yes. Now, ladies and gentlemen, by the way, Matt, to answer your question, I'm doing awesome, brother, but I do want you guys to think. Don't be texting and driving. It might be my kids or grandkids that you take out. Secondly, pay attention to the road. There's enough other dumbasses that aren't paying attention to the road, and it's your job. Once you put that key in the ignition, it is your job to pay attention. So do your job. Pay attention. Don't be texting while you're driving down the road. Don't be, you know, just pay attention. And this is what made me come up with that. I was on I-295 yesterday. I'm doing 74 miles an hour. I have a trailer locked on the ass end of my truck. This woman comes up on my left in the quote-unquote fast lane. I have a fairly large truck. I can look down into her vehicle. I can see what she's doing. Like, even conversion vans, I look down into them. She is passing me. I'm doing 75 miles an hour. That means she's pushing close to 80. And I see her with one hand on her wheel, and she has her cell phone in her other hand. And I can see her head is down looking at that cell phone. She's slowly coming towards my lane. Stay in your own damn lane. B, that text or phone call or whatever can wait till you get away from me because I have grandchildren that I want to grow old with. I'm not old yet. I want to see them grow old. I want them to be old enough to remember me when I am taken out of this world. And I want that to be done by God's choice, not some dumbass on the interstate. So I laid on the horn. The first thing she did was dropped her cell phone and grabbed the steering wheel with both hands and moved back into her lane.
Which she should have been doing in the first place.
Exactly. Then she looked up at me because, you know, I'm right beside her. She actually let off the throttle, apparently. Then she looked up at me and flew me the bird to see me, which I wasn't much better. At that moment in time, I was steering with my knees, and I clapped at her. Keep in mind, folks, if you do something stupid and you take somebody else's life, you didn't just take one life. You altered how many. So pay attention. Just pay attention. That text will wait. That phone call can wait. I remember when I grew up and I first started driving, I couldn't call anybody from my car because, well, the only thing that we could do was scribe messages in rock and throw them over the fence. Nothing needs to be done that urgent that you have to put my life in danger to tell your daughter, hey, remember to buy butter. Hey, I'm coming your way. Nothing is that flipping urgent. Get your shit together. Pay attention. You're on the road with people who have lives. They have children. They have grandchildren. They have brothers. They have sisters. Don't take them out because you're a dumbass and have to make sure that your information that is so damn vital. Did you buy bread on the way home? No one gives a shit. If they didn't buy bread on the way home, when you get home, drive that 3 minutes up the road and get bread. But don't take a life to figure this out.
Yeah, unless you have a 60-mile commute through the Alaskan tundra to the nearest convenience store. Right. I don't think that, I mean, nothing is so pressing. The guys at work and myself have been riding long enough that we know not to ride in blind spots and this, that, and the other thing. But the, one of the guys was riding into work today, and girl texting on her phone. He was just sitting there, you know, watching the car, and he was sitting maybe about 5 feet behind the corner of her bumper, and he could see her phone was up, like, at face level, and she was texting, and with no turn signal or anything, just got over into his lane, so then he's 5 feet away from her bumper in his lane. He's laying on the horn, all that stuff, and then she ended up getting back over to get past the car, and then so she was first in the left lane. He was right behind another car. That car turned right, so he pulled up. She wouldn't even look at him. She was just still sitting there looking down on her phone and texting. It's like, well, if he didn't have the peace of mind of the sense, she would have killed him.
Yeah, and you know, now here's the true definition of a bike rider. When I rode, which I can't afford a new bike, sadly, my head had to look like an owl on a tree, just constantly swinging in, you know, 360-degree directions because nobody else does. Just pay attention, folks. That's all I ask. It doesn't have to be somebody on a bike. It can be somebody in a large vehicle next to you, but if you touch them the right way at the right speed, it's what the police call a pit maneuver, pursuit interaction technique. It will spin their vehicle. And if you do that at 75 mile an hour on the highway, it will destroy their world. Pay attention. You really don't want to be the one that's responsible for taking a life. So, hey, I do have to, and I'm going to throw this out. Lyle Lotz, Twisted Paranormal, in the chat. If you want to talk to him, join us in the chat. But Lyle Lotz from Team Twisted, and trust me, that's a twisted team. join him in the chat. We love having you, brother. Thank you so much for joining us again. Oh, we're stars, and he loves listening in. Yeah. No, I'm not sure that we're... Matt, do you consider yourself a star?
Not at all. No, really. I'm not saying that cocky or sarcastic. No, not at all.
Well, let me ask you this. Name the biggest star right now in television. Who did you see on TV this morning? Who did you see on Entertainment Tonight last night?
I don't watch that stuff, so I couldn't tell you. I'm not even, and I catch crap for this all the time. Like, I'm actually not even kidding. I pretty much watch, like, educational programming all the time when I'm watching TV. I go to sleep with the Discovery Science Channel on.
I do the same. Or the America Channel, because, you know, I mean, who doesn't want to look at places that they will probably never get the ability to go to? So I watch all of those. So let's take, let's see, I saw something about...
We'll call Morgan Freeman for what I watch.
Yeah.
We'll call Morgan Freeman.
Yeah, Morgan Freeman. I saw a thing on Jessica Simpson. She got married over the weekend. Those are stars. There are people that have bodyguards. They are people that, you know, probably growing up through high school, they went through the same exact shit that we did. Here's my definition of a star. Somebody that makes a positive advancement and role model in somebody else's life. I don't care if it's only one. I don't care if it's 1,000. I don't care if it's 100,000. But they have to be a positive role model in at least one person's life. That makes them a star. To be called a star, Lyle, I love you, brother, but I don't consider myself a star. I try my best to enlighten people in the world of the paranormal. I try my best to enlighten people in just everyday life. All the bullshit that I've been through in 40 plus years of life.
years of life.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm not a star, brother. I'll never be a star. But I do want to thank you for calling me that and thinking that highly of me. I do think you are a star, my friend, because you are trying to bring out in the paranormal world what is supposed to be brought out. And that's just the truth and what it is. None of us have answers about the paranormal. None of us really know exactly what the paranormal is. But I think it's awesome that we are all out here trying our best. Now, with that being said, I'm going to, well, I already had a rant. Shit, now I'm going to take another rant. Hardcore Pawn. P-A-W-N. Hardcore Pawn.
Wait for it.
Is this not a absolute, I'm going to have to bite my tongue here, and I'm probably going to bleed a little bit. So if at any moment in time you folks hear me mumbling, it's because I'm putting the towel to my tongue. Is this not a piece of shit moment of time on television? It makes the entire town look like shit, being that it's in Detroit, Michigan. Detroit, Michigan, for the longest time, had some of the most respectable people that I've ever met. I've been lost in Detroit. I've been through Detroit working. I've worked in Detroit. And now all of a sudden you have this program that True TV puts out called Hardcore Pawn. And I think they actually aimed it with that name just to make you look at it as something negative and dirty. And then all they do is air the jackasses that come in knowing that there are TV cameras all over the place and act like complete cretins of society. True TV, I will now shun you. True TV, get your shit together and show a better side of humanity. Show a better side of humanity as a whole and not just those that play for the camera. And if that's what you want to do, I will put a block on my TV against your programming. You should be ashamed. Every producer on True TV, every network executive on True TV, you should be ashamed. You should hide in a cave because you are pieces of shit for showing the lowest part of humanity that panders to the camera and you think it's awesome. I hope this show is pulled. I hope it's banned. And I hope the producers get fired and end up having to pawn their shit so they can look as low life as everybody that comes into that American Golden Pawn as you portray them.
Well,
I feel so much better. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Full Spectrum Radio.
Yeah, take a breath there, guy. The whole point, well, True TV is basically, the whole network is based on reality. But there's nothing, there's nothing that I've seen on there that's based around positive reality. There's some, home shows and stuff that have been on there. But, the other thing I don't understand when you get to the name of pawn shows, you have Pawn Stars, PAWNSTARS, which is a hint at porn stars. Then you have Hardcore Pawn, PAWN, which is a hint at hardcore porn. Where's the sex in selling old because you need money? I never got that connection. I thought those were called for a lot of it. I thought they were called antique shops and resale shops. Where did it turn into a $1 million pornography reference? That's beyond me. But no, if you watch Pawn Stars out of Vegas, it's a lot better as far as being a classy kind of reality TV show versus pawn, and I'll agree with you, where hardcore pawn is, it's like, oh, let's air the shit of the shit and have this greasy-haired dude that treats everybody like crap and wears gaudy-ass leather and jewelry and stuff all the time and kick people out. And it's a totally different spectrum, and I think that they are monopolizing it in a lot of ways just because they have ratings. But I also feel that the people who watch Hardcore Pawn are also fans of Maury and Jerry Springer. So it's catering to an audience. You can't exactly blame, you can't blame the network. You blame the individuals who are involved in running their stuff the way that they do. How much of it is actually real and how much is staged with all the people from TV that we've talked to? Who the hell knows?
It's all in, like, everybody wants to be a star. I understand that. Everybody thinks that they're going to be Bridget Bardot. Everybody thinks that they're going to be anybody that has millions and lives in some, $10 million home in California. But they only air the lowlifes, and it's all the producers of that show. I understand that. It's not the people of Detroit. It's not representative of Detroit as a whole. But that's what they put it out to be. Everybody that comes in there is, oh, pardon my French, ladies and gentlemen, and if you have children, plug their ears. Oh, motherfucker, you got to give me more than $65 for this. No, it's...
You just bought it for $20 at Walmart. What are you talking about?
Yeah, and you expect to bring in here and sell it for $65. No, if your item is only worth $65, then take $65. Don't come in there pandering to the camera. And Lyle, I agree with you. Lizard lick towing.
Oh, God. You know what? This show is going to go a completely different way if we don't
this
show is
going to go bad.
Real quick, I will say, and I do have to say, and I talked to you about it before the show, we have a very, very good customer of ours. I've known him for years and years and years. As far as all the negative that's happened in Detroit, I have to say hats off to this individual. He has done a bunch of stuff. Funny, his name's William Smith, but it's not that Will Smith. He was from West Philadelphia, born and raised. I'm going to stop there because I'll keep going. But,
And where are you going to?
No, I'm not doing it.
Break it down, Matt.
Well, he spent most of his time on the playground.
I'm not going to.
Maybe later in the show, I'm not going to leave.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, as I mute Matt because he won't break it down, I think what he's talking about is Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Yes.
But since we won't break it down, I'm going to mute him.
No. But no, in a completely 100% positive way, for what's happened in Detroit with the auto factories closing and, the just people losing their jobs, leaving the area, there's all these vacant buildings. I've been there since this has happened, and the shit of the shit in certain areas is what stuck around, while the people who are trying to help the community ended up leaving. Well, this gentleman, who has absolutely nothing to do with it, but he has money and he has the resources, decided to, he's not buying, like, properties here and there and restoring them and trying to get them back on track and everything. He's buying blocks of houses. Like, city blocks is what he's buying. Sending crews in there, rehabbing them, you know, getting the burnout places habitable. He's doing an amazing, amazing thing, and he's not charging a premium for it. If you want a home, you're there. If you're struggling, he has certain financial backers that he's working with or helping families get into the homes, get on their feet. Businesses, he's basically trying to help certain parts of Detroit rebuild.
Good on him.
So I just have to say that hats off, and hopefully, I mean, it's a really, really cool city, and I hope that it does turn around for the better.
Now, mentioning all the different cities, you know, we mentioned Detroit, we mentioned Bel Air. We will be talking in a moment about Gordonsville, Virginia, and we're talking about traveling and everything else. We have some amazing friends that run NOLA Investigations.
In Louisiana. New Orleans, yeah. Louisiana.
There we go.
Nolens.
So we're going to play our, we have no option. We have to play this, and it's awesome. But you need to listen and pay attention. Write down the number, folks. If you want to go do an investigation down in New Orleans, this is the place to do it at. So here we go.
Going to New Orleans for the weekend, for vacation? Are you wanting to take a ghost hunting tour but tired of the same old walking tours where you don't even get to go into the locations? And you're not even sure if the history is accurate? Well, call NOLA Ghost Hunting Tours. This team of guys are going to take you into a real haunted location where you're going to get to use the state-of-the-art equipment that ghost hunters use. Be the paranormal investigator. You get to work with an experienced, competent team of investigators and have the real, true paranormal experience. Experience the dark side of New Orleans. Call NOLA Ghost Hunting Tours. They have tours Friday through Monday. Tours start at 7 and at 10 p.m. For more information, call 504-708-3567.
So there you go, folks. If you're going to go check out a location down in New Orleans, you have to check out, you have to give them a buzz. New Orleans Investigations, they've got some of the best locations on lock, and it is what it is. So make sure if you're headed that way, you want to check out investigative locations, go with them. Now, Matt, can we
move on
to our guest? Which
we
actually,
can do that.
If you're in the Virginia area, I've got a awesome location that you have to check out. They have a Paracon coming up, which we're trying to figure out at this point what date works best. We're trying to figure out how not to intrude into the rest of the Paracons. But I have an absolutely beautiful dear friend, Angel May, online with us. And she's from the Exchange Hotel and Museum. It's in Gordonsville, Virginia. I absolutely love this place. Angel, are you on with us?
Can you hear me?
I got you, darling. I can hear you. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Good.
Ooh.
Hello, Matt.
Hey, Angel there. How are you?
Hey, I'm good.
All right. Why don't you give people a little bit of background and some info on the Exchange and how you got involved with it.
Okay. First, I'll tell you how I got involved in it. 4 years ago, I had went out there with a paranormal group that I was a member of and was just doing a ghost hunt and started talking to the vice president of the board because it's run by a historic Gordonsville Incorporated, which is a board of directors, and he was just giving me some of the info, and knowing that I was a history major and I love history and was all about it, he said that they needed volunteers, and so I started volunteering and did ghost hunts for over a year, and I helped raise $18,800 the first year that I was there on the night force. That was one of their biggest fundraisers, and after that, I guess they saw potential in me and hired me as the administrator and director of the museum, and then the board of directors voted me in as the vice president, so that's not too shabby, and I've been there ever since, so it's a wonderful place. I love it. Not from that area. I actually live in a different county. I commute almost an hour every day to and from to work, but I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. It's just packed with history and the spirit there. I mean, every day when I come in, I greet them, and every day when I leave, I tell them goodbye, and I'll see them the next day. But the museum is called the Exchange Hotel Civil War Medical Museum. And what it was is back in the 1840s, it started off as a tavern. There was a gentleman named Richard O'Mahondra that came to Gordonsville from Louisiana County and brought 16 slaves with him and started a tavern and operated the tavern from 1840 up until 1859 when it caught fire. And when it caught fire, he quickly rebuilt it as a hotel that was completed in 1860. And the reason they called it the Exchange was because there were three different sets of tracks that had been laid there. Mr. O'Mahondra came to Gordonsville because he worked with the railroad, and he knew that, you know, that it was going to be a profitable place to have a business. And in 1840, the Louisa Railroad came through. And then by 1854, the Orange and Alexandria tracks had been laid. And so there were, you know, different tracks there, and people would have to have lodging because the trains didn't run after dark back then. And so he quickly rebuilt it as the hotel in 1816, called it the Exchange because the railroad, you would come through and you'd have to buy another ticket to get to your next leg of travel. It wasn't a main thoroughfare. It would come there, stop, you'd have to get another ticket and then get to your next destination. So it was a pretty busy hub there. And they operated it as a hotel up until the First Battle of Manassas when the Civil War broke out. And when that broke out, the Confederacy took the building and the property over and operated the Gordonsville Forwarding and Receiving Hospital there. And they treated over 70,000 troops over the course of the war there and had over 900 deaths in the building. And so that's why it's called a Civil War Medical Museum, because we have a lot of the medical things that pertain to that era when it was a hospital. And then at the end of the war, the Union occupied the building, and they used it as a Freedmen's Bureau, which was an institution for the newly freed slaves to get an education. And they adjudicated court cases there for them because slaves weren't allowed in a courtroom before they were free, and they also gave them medical care. And so that's pretty much the main gist of the history there at the museum. We have self-guided daily tours every day. You can come in and pay your fee, and all of the money that we get from these tours and things like that goes straight back into the museum because we're a nonprofit, and that's the only money that we generate. We're not state-funded or federally funded or anything like that. So it's just to share the history with the people.
That is really awesome. There, you know, for the history that's in that area in general, the fact that people are willing to keep it alive and work for it to keep it active, it's like there's so many places in Chicago that are historical that the Preservation Society doesn't even look at twice. But if you dive into the history of everything that happened at these locations, screw it, tear it down, we'll put condos there. Like,
see, that's what happened. That's what happened in Gordonsville. There was the Gordon Inn, and it was where Stonewall Jackson actually stayed, and they bulldozed it to make room for a Tasty Freeze, and it's just such a shame that people don't take these places and save them. They need to save it. That's all we have left is our history.
Yeah, and, you know, I do understand for larger cities that there are some things that need progression just because. I mean, there wouldn't be money for the cities if we preserved everything that was there. And I get it, but at the same time, I think there should be agreements of if they're going to do something like that, they're going to bulldoze a place, so they're going to, you know, take it down and build a skyscraper or whatever it be. There should be at least something with the new owners, the new property managers that pays homage, that it can be used on not even a ghost tour, just a historical tour. Like, you can have your condo building, but we want a plaque on the wall and also be able to have people on a historical tour not go through the whole building, but at least be able to show up there and say, yes, this happened there.
Right, right.
To keep it alive, even if you can't see it and there's, you know, whatever the last picture or in its heyday, whatever the picture was, so people can get an idea. I think it gets lost a lot. And now, like Dennis was talking about at the beginning of the show, with his grandkids and all that stuff, there's a lot of places that they're never going to, like, know about or actually get a visual of. This is Civil War area. So,
yeah, the whole land around it was based on the Civil War. Now, Angel, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the number that I was told was there were 59 receiving hospitals total in the entire U.S.
It was 53 in the state of Virginia.
Okay,
not in
that
the whole
received
U.S.
Union
just,
and Confederate.
No, the map that we have at the museum shows 53 receiving hospitals in the state of Virginia that were just Confederate.
Oh, well, what I was getting at was they received both.
They did. Most of them did. Mm-hmm. Most of them did because it was a neutral territory. It's where you went to go get help. But the map that we have shows all of the receiving hospitals that were in Virginia, not throughout the United States, because there were so many more. If there were 53 in Virginia, could you imagine how many were all through the southern states?
Yeah, to me, it's just amazing that you are trying to preserve the history of a location that saved both sides and was guarded by both sides.
Right. Right.
So
the
you
fact
could
that it's a... Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you're the guest.
Well, the fact that it's a 160-year-old building and it's still standing. At the beginning of the war, the guards had to guard it against the Union troops to come in and make sure that they didn't take the town over. And, you know, it could have been burnt down then. You know, the Union troops came in and they burnt portions of the depot and a couple of stores down on Main Street, but they never made it as far as the hospital. But it could have happened. And then at the end of the war, when it was a Union-occupied building, they had to hire 6 guards to guard it from the townspeople because the townspeople were so irate that there were Negroes on this property that housed, you know, the bodies of dead soldiers. And, you know, they just thought that that was such a travesty. And so there's so many times it could have been burnt down, bulldozed, or anything. The fact that it's still standing is just amazing. And so, you know, I'm just a steward. But while I'm here being the steward, I'm going to make sure that nothing happens to it.
And now, Matt, I have to tell you, I have been through the Exchange Hotel on many occasions. One of the things that I always make note of is energy that's around me. And this location is just loaded with energy. You can always feel that somebody is there. Like there's always a guard. It just, the energy is amazing. Even in the depot, which was moved in what, the mid-70s, I think?
No, it was 1997.
Oh, they only moved it back in 97?
Yeah, that's when we bought it.
Okay. But, I mean, it used to be right on the railroad tracks.
Oh, yeah. You could reach your hand out the door and touch the train.
But it's an amazing location. It truly is. Just everything that went on there with the battles that were real close by, with all of the soldiers that came through, with all the dead that were transported through that building, all of the injured that were treated there. Angel, do we have even an approximate count of how many came through?
It was 70,000 that came through during the whole course of the war. And there were only 900 deaths.
Well, through the hospital. But how many, do we even have a guess how many came through the depot?
No, because the depot, even after the war, was used as a passenger station and a freight area. And so it was used up until 1969. The last passenger train came through. So, I mean, it's been busy since 1841 when it was built.
Now, Matt, do you see why I say there's so much energy in that location?
Well,
and the fact
for
that
sure.
Before it was even built as a tavern, it was Indian. It was all ran by Indians, and I was told that it was swampland. The man who owned it was Nathaniel Gordon, and he had sold it to his son-in-law, or given it to his son-in-law. And when he gave it to his son-in-law, it's because it was, excuse my language, the shitty property, because it was where Indians were, and it was swampy, and they would bury their dead there. And so it was all of that before the tavern was built. You know, all of this transpired back in the 1700s, so... A lot of activity on that property.
Well, as far as, for the amount of time that you've been there, and Dennis, I know, you've been there, two handfuls of times?
Yeah, something like that.
But, Angel, the amount of time that you've been there, and you work with it every day and basically deal with the property every day.
Mm-hmm.
Have you gotten anything solid to where you know who's who as far as a transparent American?
As far as a what?
A transparent American. I'm trying to be PC for our ghost friends.
Oh, because I was like, what is he talking about?
Have you seen ghosts?
Oh, yeah, I've seen plenty of spirits there, yeah.
But have you developed a relationship knowing who's who, what they do?
Oh, yeah. I know what their names are, where they came from, what they did, what their role was there. Oh, yeah, we have first. That's what I call them.
Yeah, we developed a PC. Go ahead.
I forgot what I was going to say. Go ahead.
Oh, no. And then we developed the term transparent American to be PC for our spirit friends.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I just call them
spirit.
It's kind of a smart-ass term, by the way. Everybody's so PC that, you know, they're afraid to insult somebody.
Oh, see,
I'm
not
care.
Worried about all that. That's too much.
Yeah.
Dennis, don't go on another rant. Dennis, not another rant.
No, I'm not going on another rant.
Yeah, you can't please everybody. You just got to please yourself.
Yeah. Now, Angel, who is the most obnoxious and the most forthcoming spirit at the exchange?
Probably Major Richard. He was the quartermaster who was there, and he is out in the summer kitchen, and quite a different character. We've had a bunch of different paranormal groups that have come out and had run-ins with him, and I personally haven't had any bad experiences or anything that's negative from him. I just feel not welcome at certain times. But that's, I don't know, maybe it's just, this is just my opinion, so please don't take it the wrong way. But some people come in and disrespect him, and I don't. When I go in and speak to spirit, I'm very respectful because I honor his position. He was the Major there, and I always addressed him as Major Richard, and I respect the fact that he was the quartermaster, and he had a lot on his plate there. He had to unload the trains. He was responsible for all the freight coming in, all of the supplies coming in. He was in charge of the soldiers that passed away, getting all of their, you know, belongings and clothing and their bodies back to their families if they weren't buried there on the ground. So he had a lot of responsibility there. And for different paranormal groups to come in and, you know, kind of provoke and say mean things to him, you know, I can't blame him. I'd be pissed off, too. And I would try to retaliate against them. But I personally never do that, so I haven't had any bad experiences with him. But I know quite a few other people that have.
What do you mean they've had bad experiences? What have they experienced from the Major?
Well, one of the previous board members that was there was pinned up against the closet door and felt like she was suffocating. I know another board member who's still currently there that was pushed down the stairs. He had a computer in his hands and he was pushed down the stairs. And then there's another paranormal investigator that just was out last week with the RIP files, and he has a long history with Major Richard. He actually was out there with two other investigators, and they were provoking. He wasn't and was holding a voice recorder in his hand, and he felt like he had been overtaken. And on the EVPs that we, you know, recorded that night and listened back to, it sounds like a pocket pistol, like he had been shot. And this guy is over 6 foot tall, and he felt like something just overcame him, pushed him into the closet, and the voice recorder went flying out of his hand. He wasn't saying a thing. He was just standing there, you know, as a bystander recording while these other two guys were kind of talking crap to Major Richard. So I know those are three that stand out in my mind, but there are quite a few other experiences from other people that they've had there. I've done, God, every weekend just about I have a paranormal group there or a public tour. So I've had so many people coming in and doing investigations that, you know, it's hard for me to remember every single little thing that's happened with every person.
Can I mention my episode out in the depot just a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah. That was mind-blowing.
Okay. Well, I don't want to make it sound like a bad place, because it really isn't.
No, it's not. And this is just few and far between. Even the things with Major Richard, it's been, 2 years since something like that happened.
Right. The majority of the interaction that I've gotten out of that location has been pleasant. However, I did something a couple of weeks ago that I don't know if it's been done before. I played a YouTube video of an authentic rebel yell. About midway through, I felt something slap me on the back or hit me on the back, and it brought me, like, I was just rested on my knees, and it brought me off my knees. It brought me upward while Lance from Twisted Paranormal Society was standing about 3 to 5 feet to my left, and nobody else was anywhere near me. And my first question was, what the hell? Lyle's question was, what's wrong? And I went, did you just hit me on the back with something? He said, well, I'm over here, dude. I didn't have anything. I had 2 6- to 8-inch marks down my back. Now, I'm wondering if, and I know that during its time as a receiving hospital, it received countless bodies, both Union and Confederate.
Mm-hmm.
If you were thought to be dead, you were stacked over in the corner. If you weren't actually dead, you probably were before you were pulled out of the corner. Now, I realize that there were a limited number of Union soldiers that were actually brought into the exchange.
Mm-hmm.
But when I played that rebel yell, about midway through, I got struck by something. I felt
well,
it on
and
my
they,
back.
They also housed prisoners out there, too, that they were taken down to Levy Prison in Richmond. And so, I mean, it could have been the spirit of anyone or anybody. It could have been a Union soldier. It could have been a prisoner who was just angry. You know, you never know. Not unless we get an EVP that has a name or something that would, you know, tie them to that.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was an amazing moment. Now, I had 3 recorders running in the building. I did not catch anything as of yet, and I'm still reviewing them. However, Barry, who is a very close friend of the Exchange Hotel, Barry spends how much much time there.
He comes quite a bit for the public tours.
Okay. He accompanied me back out there later after the public tour. Actually carried a replica 8th North Carolina battle flag. And he did an authentic rebel yell. And Angel, you and I sat in the office and listened to the recorder. Do you remember what was said after him talking?
Yeah, it was very derogatory.
Can you say it?
Do I have to?
I would really love it if you would.
It said F you, and I left out the UCK.
There you go. It, to me, it was amazing. But was it not a very clean, very plain, very bold F you?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the thing about the exchange. We do EVP sessions all the time. We do them even when there's nobody there. I'll just leave a recorder out while I'm working. And we are averaging every 8 minutes, because we try to do 8-minute bursts, between 20 and 25 EVPs. I mean, they're talkative there. They've got stuff to say.
Oh, most definitely. Now, you also remember the noise that we heard, and then the EVP voice and what it said after he gave his rebel yell? Do you remember the noise that we heard and what we determined it to be?
Was it the growl sound? I couldn't know that was Mark. I'm sorry. See, I have groups every weekend, and I just had last week, and got a really growl when he came out, so that's what I'm thinking about.
Yeah. What we thought was a bayonet being affixed.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Okay, now I remember.
And do you remember the two words that were said after that that we picked up, and all four of us there heard it plain as day? We heard what sounded like a bayonet being affixed to a muzzle or musket. Then we heard the words, no question, no doubt about it, lead me.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it's an absolutely amazing flipping location. And I got to tell you, Angel, I am so jealous that you get to spend so much time there and you get to interact with all the spirits there.
I hear that all the time. They're like, you've got a dream. I'm like, yeah, but I don't sit and talk to spirit all day long. I really got to work.
Other stuff has to be done.
Yeah, it sure does.
So here's a question. Is there one that identifies with you the most or more, or that, like, basically picks on you the most? And the reason I say picks on is because you can't see them. So, is there one that kind of attached to you as far as a liking, not an actual attachment?
Not necessarily one. There's quite a few that I talk to on a regular basis. We have a little girl that's on the... Well, everybody acquaints her to the third floor, but she's all over the hotel. We've got three stories, and she comes downstairs and has so many EVPs for singing and laughing, and I always try to interact with her daily, and her name was Emma. And I'll say, you know, good morning, Emma, I'm here, or, you know, when I'm locking up, I'm like, goodbye, my lovies, I'll see you tomorrow. I know it sounds crazy, but I do that. But she's one of the ones that I talk to the most. And then there's one in the kitchen. Her name is B, Mrs. B, and she was the laundress there. And I talk to her on a regular basis as well. And there's a gentleman that's in our freedman's room, and his name is Bill, and I talk to him quite frequently, too. So, I mean, there's different key players that are there. There's Tom, the teacher, that's on the third floor that doesn't like to have his picture taken, and he always tells all the rest of the spirits, shut the pictures, come shut them. He doesn't want us to get their photographs. And there's just, I mean, so many different ones there. I could go on and on and on. Anna, the cook, talk to her. She's out in the kitchen. But the main one that I talk to, I would say, is Ma, because she's a child.
But have you gotten, and going back in history and recapping what you were talking about before, as far as the, with the African-Americans, the stuff that happened there, is there any negative energy from that?
No. All of the slaves that are there, it's all positive, jubile. I mean, it's just, I think they were there. I honestly don't.
Okay. So they're content. It's not like it's a, you know, anything to do with the slave trade or negativity that's coming out of that. And they're still having to deal with it and suffer. And
well, I don't get the energy from them at all, no.
Well, I don't think they were actually treated bad there.
No.
Go ahead.
No, you're the only one talking.
Oh, well, Angel started to talk. I don't think that they were treated bad there. I think that they were, I get that they were treated rather well there. They were worked a lot. There were a couple that were mistreated while they were there, but I think that backed off too, because it was understood that they were there to help. I think the biggest majority of everything that is there, and as far as the people that are there, the energy that are there, are mostly, I mean, they passed there because that was what they were doing. They were there to help. And I think they were, you know, their whole goal was to help.
Well, and this is my theory. If you come across a spirit, no matter where they are or what they've endured or how they live their life, I think their personality is the same exact when they pass as it is when they're alive. If you are an asshole in death, you're going to be an asshole. I mean, an asshole in life, you're going to be an asshole in death. If you are a sweet, pleasant person in life, why would you change when you go to the other side?
And, Matt, that's why I love this woman. Haven't I told you that 1,000 times?
Oh, that's been a huge... those words have actually come out of Dennis's mouth. In that order and the screw up sometimes as well.
and
but,
that's
yeah.
why I love this woman so much.
Oh, you're so
awesome.
Sweet. Yeah, I mean, they're, and you know, I could go on and on and on about what my theories are for the spirit world, but I don't think we're ever really dead. I think our bodies are just our shells and our bodies die, but our spirit lives forever. So, you know, why would you change in death? If you're going to die, why would you just be this, you know, this monster and things like that? It just makes no sense to me.
And
so
that's exactly what I've said for, how long have you known me now, Matt?
Years, unfortunately.
Don't
you
still
like me?
You know I love you. Shut up. No, like, and all right. Of the history of the place, besides the Civil War and all that, what is the most notable piece of history about the location to you? I mean, obviously it's different for everybody, but to you, what's the most notable piece of history?
To me is the fact that it was a hospital that treated all of these men that came in, you know, from the battlefields and things like that. That's the most part that has the biggest impact on me. Think about that. Every day when I come in, I open up and I cut all the lights on and I'm coming down the main stairwell and I've got my hand on the stairwell and I think of how many men had their hands on that stairwell before me. And how many of them had families that were waiting for them to come back, and some of them didn't come back, and that's the most impactful for me.
That's pretty damn deep. Now
yeah,
think about it.
Think about it.
This is a location that has been around for. Only that location, 175, 200 years, how many people have been through that location? And each and
walk
every one of them.
Yeah, and walk in the steps that you're walking and touching the things that you're touching.
Each and every one of those people over that almost 200 years has been right where you are.
Mm-hmm. And they were somebody. They were somebody's husband, somebody's brother, somebody's grandfather. I mean, they were somebody's family. And they all have a story.
And that is why I think so highly of you.
Thank you.
Being the administrator of that location.
You have to respect it. You have to honor it. And if you're not there for the right reasons, then you don't need to be there. If you're not there to honor them and their legacy and what they fought for, even if you don't believe in it, or even if you're not into history, they were a person, just like you and I are. And so you should always honor those that were before us.
And that's the same thing with, like, speaking of historians, and Dennis, you know her too, my dear friend Ursula Bielski, who runs Chicago Hauntings Ghost Tours up here in the Chicago area. And it's the same thing. Like, anytime I have an investigation, she's always on an investigation with me. And we don't provoke, we don't do any of that, and especially if it's a location that she's done a lot of research on, if we're not getting anything, we're not getting anything.
Right.
You don't walk in there and disrespect and whatever, because, yeah, that was a human being.
I tell people, when you come in, why would you scream at somebody else's brother? Or would you want someone to do that to your grandfather or your grandmother? You know, you wouldn't expect that in life. Then why in the hell would you do it while they're dead? It just makes no sense to me. And I feel like, personally, I get so much more evidence and responses from spirit when I'm respectful.
Oh, yeah. If you were to, and this is the example I always use. If I walked up to you and basically just started being a complete asshole to you, you have the ability you're all muffled, but I'm going to ignore that anyway. if I just walk up to you and I'm being a complete asshole to you, you have the ability that I can't see you. Are you going to respond, or are you just going to sit back and laugh at me being a jackass?
I wouldn't give you the time of day. I would be the biggest bitch ever. I would act like, you know, you're not even there.
Yeah. And not saying that every, you know, spirit has the ability to differentiate that, but at the same time, if you want to have interaction, you have to be approachable. You can't be negative, because it's like, oh, look at that asshole screaming over there in the corner. Yeah.
Right.
You have to be somebody that somebody wants to talk to.
Right.
And I don't care what what spirit you're trying to talk to. If you're talking or attempting to talk to a serial killer or something like that, okay, yeah, you may have negative thoughts about them, but how much, if the reports are that it's an intelligent interaction, what are you going to get if you walk in there saying, oh, you were a piece of shit, you suck? Like, I'd just be sitting there in the corner if I was that spirit and know that I couldn't be seen. I'd just ding something and be flipping you off the whole time. I wouldn't talk to you.
I agree.
Now, Angel, have you heard the stories that Chief Clay has had out of this location?
As far as when our alarm went off and they had to come up and check it out? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, the second floor, the piano room, what is now the, like...
It's the parlor.
I don't know what the parlor.
Mm-hmm.
Coming out of the back room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have motion sensors on all three floors, and they're all separate. You know, the first floor is the first floor, second is the second, the third is the third. And so our second floor motion sensors are going off.
Oh, sorry. I was talking to my dog. I accidentally hit the unmute button when I was trying to grab the phone. And yes, I did scream out, "You're wet and stinky," because he came in from out in the rain. Sorry, continue.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay.
Oh, God. Welcome to live radio.
Yep. That's why I had to just run in the house just a few minutes ago. It was a huge thunderstorm was coming, and it was lightning, and I was like, Lord, I'm going to get electrocuted.
Oh, God. So,
Sorry.
You've heard Chief Play's story.
Okay. And so the alarm went off, and, you know, the police come out, and they come up to the second story because they have keys and everything and come in. And as they're coming through one of the back rooms, a 7-foot-tall shadow rushed them. And they all draw their guns and didn't know what the heck it was. And then it was gone. And they couldn't find any reason why the alarm went off. There's no, you know, forced entry. Nothing had been touched. Nothing had been moved. That's one of the things that have happened. And then recently I've switched security companies, and the second floor motion alarm always goes off in the parlor room. And I even had the guy come back out, and I was like, why does it keep going off at like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning? He came and inspected everything, and he said, I have no idea. It has to be motion. He said there are 8 different sensors in that room. And so even if it's just a little bit of motion by one of them, it wouldn't set it off. It has to set off and go through all 8 of them. And we have nothing. So all I can say is it's a spirit running around messing with the system.
The story that I got from Chief Clay always made me want to just sit in that room. And what's now the parlor room, which when I was there 2 years ago and got this story from him, there were the mannequins with the period dress and everything. The minute that I walk in that room, now, can I call you out on your abilities?
On what?
On your abilities.
Yeah, go ahead. I knew you were going to.
Okay. Well, I didn't want to do it without your permission. Just like I don't throw mine out there very often.
Because it kind of messes with your credibility sometimes. People think, oh, yeah, sure.
Exactly.
So I don't wear it like a badge.
Yeah. I don't have a, you know, badge on my shoulder that says I have abilities I can remote view.
Right.
So I don't throw mine out there very often, and I didn't want to throw yours out there without your permission. I realize I kind of, you know, screwed that up. We should have had this, you know, agreed upon off air. But the minute that I walk in that room, I always feel that I'm being watched. No matter where I'm at in that room, I always feel that from the other side of that room, there's somebody standing there just looking at me. Do you feel that same thing in that
I do. And when I was cleaning that parlor, I know for sure that I heard a slave lady's voice saying, what are you doing? They're not going to like it like that. And so I moved that piano 3 times until she told me that they would like it in that spot. They're watching you all the time. they're monitoring your every move.
Now, remember a couple of weekends ago when I fixed the chair?
Yeah.
I won't give any names, but she leaned on that chair. That's all she did. The leg gave way. It had already been repaired. So it's not like she broke a period chair. It had already been repaired. But one of the voices that I heard said, what is, oh, damn. I'm gassy as hell, pardon me. One of the voices that I heard said, what is that? I broke out a new compact battery-powered drill. And I had the drill to drive a screw in for a support. And it sounded so lifelike to me that I actually looked over my right shoulder to see who said it. Well, it was only me and Ryan. You know, Ryan from ASPS. But I looked over my right shoulder to see who was talking to me.
He was probably standing there with that goofy grin. What are you looking at? He probably didn't even hear it.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely there. It is a fantastic location.
Well, I've got a claim I can tell you. I just hired a cleaning lady last week, and on Thursday evening was her first cleaning. And, you know, I showed her where everything was, gave her everything, told her I was going to lock her in, and, you know, I would see her the next day to be able to give her her check and everything. And so the next day when she came back, I said, so, did the spirits talk to you? And she said, you're going to think I'm crazy. I was like, no, it's going to happen. She said she was in the parlor room dusting, and she heard a woman's voice plain as day say, what are you doing? And I said, oh, my God, that's the room that every time I go in to change it around, they're always like, they're not going to like it like that. What are you doing? And so, I mean, she's just a random person that's coming in to clean that has nothing to do with nothing, and she had that, so.
Is she still with you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well,
and I asked
cool.
her, I said, did you answer back? And she said, of course I answered back. She said, I'm cleaning. What does it look like? I said, that's cute.
Oh, I got to tell you, the spirits that are there are very upfront, very strong, which I'm not real sure where they draw their energy from, but they're very upfront. They're very strong.
The trains come through. I think a lot of energy comes from that. And I feel like we have transients that come in there all the time. You know, when the train comes through, I feel like they're still letting them off and letting them back on. I know that sounds crazy, but I feel like that. And we also have a funeral home across the street. And I know they come from there, too, so.
Yeah, well, I hope I can say this right. My first statement, and I'm going to stick to it. We actually have a few spirits there that are transient. And I say we because I feel so attached to the exchange. I've met and interacted with so many spirits there. But I also pick up, every time that I go there, I pick up new spirits that I don't see the next time I come.
Me too.
Those are transient spirits.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And people bring them
strange.
In. I get people that come in for night tours and they bring their relatives with them. And I talk to them as well, so it's pretty active.
Yeah. Now, I do have to ask you, and I'm going to put you on the spot, and it's one of the things that I do, because I suck at being a human. When are we going to have Paracon at the exchange? Have we narrowed down a date? Because
no,
I definitely want to narrow down a date, and I want to push the hell out of it on Full Spectrum Radio, and I want to get Matt to come in from Chicago.
Right. Well, the only thing that's stopping me right now is getting with the rest of the people that are supposed to be helping with me, you know, to do Paracon and the board. All of the decisions have to be put in front of the board of directors there, and it all has to be voted on. And so that's why it hasn't been done yet, because the volunteers haven't let me know when is a definite good date. We've been pushing for October 4th, and we're hoping that that's going to go, but I can't give you a definite tonight.
Okay. Matt? Are you good with flying in from Chicago on the weekend of October 4th?
If that's what it is, then yes.
Okay. So if we can make...
Pressure anything.
There is enough time.
Right.
It's not like, hey, are you going to be here July 4th? No, it's October. I think I can work my schedule around that.
If we can make it happen, Angel, I want you to know that you have the 130% backing of Full Spectrum Radio.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Even if it's not October's first weekend, you still have the full backing of myself and Matt. We will do what we can to make it a blowout. This is, if I'm not mistaken, the second Paracon at the exchange.
The third. It will be our third.
Oh, my
and
God.
Usually we take all the proceeds.
Yeah, I suck. And I tried to use my fingers on that, but they get tied together. So this will be the third Paracon at the exchange.
Mm-hmm. And all of the monies that are raised from the Paracon go, you know, straight back into the museum. This year, we're trying to raise funds for the depot because you've seen, you know, what state it's in. It hasn't been repaired or renovated. The roof is falling in. There's a lot of structural damage. We did get a grant through Virginia Department of Transportation, but that was only for the roof and for the outside of the building. And so we as the board, Historic Gordonsville Incorporated, are responsible for the inside. And, you know, we don't have the money to renovate the entire inside. There are pieces of the floor that need to be renovated, and it all has to be historically accurate. And our plan is, we have a five-year plan in place, is to renovate the inside and turn it into a train museum. All of the train memorabilia that, you know, is in our museum now, we want to move out there. We want to have a kitchenette put in. We want to have heating and air because there's no power. There's no plumbing. There's nothing right now. And it's our hope that once the architects work and get the roof finished and get the outside structure done, that we can go forth and do the inside so that it's, you know, an asset to the community. We want to be able to use it, you know, for conventions or for functions at the museum, you know, bingo, things like that, different fundraisers. And so that's what I want Paracon money to go towards, is to the renovation of that depot.
Well, I will say this. I do know it needs a new building or new roof. So that, ladies and gentlemen, if you can even donate $5, make sure that $5, skip lunch one day, send it to the Exchange Hotel. Let's get a new roof on the depot building. It is well worth it because the spirits that are there are very strong. They're very opinionated. The building itself
It actually is one of the oldest buildings on the property. It was built in 1841, and it's still there. I mean,
and the
1841. I mean, the building, the museum is 1860. This is 1841. So, you know, a lot of the train stations and depots have been renovated and saved in a lot of towns, and I want this to be one of them. There's so many things that transpired. There are so many troops that came through. There are so many families that came to the towns to visit their loved ones and things like that. So I'm very passionate about getting that saved as well. When we got the original deed to the property that was dated back in the 1840s, there were 75 outbuildings that Mr. Omohundra had on that property, and now all we have is three, the depot, the kitchen, and the actual hotel itself. That's it out of 75. All the rest of them are gone. And so it would just be such a shame to lose one that's been there for so long. So,
most definitely. Now, so Team Twisted is working with you to get Paracon up and running. And, yes, I'm going to throw Lyle another bone. Team Twisted is working with you.
Uh-huh.
They hope to get things started this Friday the 4th mm-hmm. at your cookout.
Yep.
Tell us about the cookout, because I haven't heard anything about it, and I can't put CPR behind it. And I
well,
can't
it's,
put
it's not a public
whole
thing
behind it.
Yeah, it's not a public thing. It's just a volunteer appreciation cookout for the volunteers that have actually came out and helped the exchange. It's the board members and their families and the volunteers and their families. And so that's what that's all about. And it's just kind of like a little get-together to say, thank you so much for coming out and helping us preserve the history and share the history and, you know, just to have a powwow and put our heads together to come up with new events and new ideas and ways to generate income to help it.
Right. Now, if I can put the full backing of Full Spectrum Radio behind you, at $5 a person. Is that welcomed?
$5 a person for what?
Just to out and enjoy the cookout, and it's a donation to the location.
Oh, Lord. I hate to say no, but, like, I've already planned it and bought the food, and, I mean,
okay.
I don't know. Cool. I don't know what to say to that, because that's a lot of stuff that I would have to get done in a matter of 2 days.
No. You don't have to do anything. I will put my efforts and my money towards anything more than what you planned. I will open up my wallet. I will open up Full Spectrum's wallet for anything more than what you planned. Full Spectrum Radio is fully behind, and Chicagoland Paranormal Researchers is fully behind everything that you want to put towards the Exchange Hotel. And I will back that out of my own wallet.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
But I was just going to ask, so that means, Dennis, you're going to be calling me for money soon?
No. No, I will deal with this. Ladies and gentlemen, those that are listening, if you are anywhere near Virginia, make the travel, make the time, come check out the Exchange Hotel. Come this weekend, join for the barbecue. It is fully on my wallet. You make a donation to the Exchange Hotel, and I will back it. It's a location that is fully worthy of it. It's a location that deserves it. It's a location that has so many spirits that gave up their life to make our country what it is. Be there. Now, how many people did you plan on supporting this weekend?
Like 25.
Okay. So anything above 25, I will pay for.
Thank you.
That.
I appreciate that.
This location, ladies and gentlemen, and I know we...
And, you know, even if they can't go for that, we're open daily for tours. And, you know, people are welcome to come out anytime. I'll take the time, give them the history, even though it's a self-guided tour, just say, hey, I've listened to Full Spectrum Radio, and I wanted to come and see what you're all about.
Oh, that's badass. You just plugged Full Spectrum Radio. You hear that, Matt? Even Angel plugs Full Spectrum Radio.
I did hear that.
Yeah, we rock.
So what's your average tour size? I mean, obviously it depends on how many people show up, but if there's like an event, like how many people do you bring on a tour at a time?
Do you mean on a daily tour? Or a night tour, because I have two different things.
Well, I assume the night tour is a lot more active than the daily tour, or is it vice versa?
Well, the daily tour, we have a lot of out-of-town visitors, and I don't normally give tours during the day unless we have a huge bus that comes in or, you know, a group that requests it. It's normally a self-guided tour. You come in and you pay the $7 fee, and you go to the museum at your own pace. And that just depends upon the day. Some days I have 15 people. Some days I have 50 people. It just depends. We don't have a normal average. The weekends, we are much more busier than we are during the week. But, you know, then again, too, it just depends on the month and, and how many people are traveling through. But the night tours, we actually are averaging between 10 and 20 people. I try not to go over 20, even though the night that Dennis was there, I had 21. But that's what we usually average. And those night tours run from 8 p.m. to midnight, and we charge $25 a person. We provide all of the equipment and give all of the history first, and then everybody breaks up into groups and goes out and investigates.
That's really damn cool. And, of course, Dennis had to sneak in just because he's a jerk. Had to sneak in an extra person and threw everything off.
I was the extra person, you jackass.
Again, point proven. But
I will say that, now, I spent my whole night in the depot building, which that is definitely my favorite location.
Isn't it?
Even 3 years ago, I think, when I did my first investigation at the exchange, the depot was my favorite location that night, just because of what I felt. I just felt there was so much around me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I had EVPs inside the building. Angel, can you tell us about the gunshot right inside the foyer?
Yes, we were told that there was a nurse that shot herself there on the second story, which it was considered the main entrance at the time, because downstairs was considered the English basement. And anyway, long story short, they say that herself there at 5, and it usually happens between 9:15 and 9:30 every night. It's like a residual, and I've gotten it on recorder multiple times, and it sounds to me, and, you know, it still scares me every single time when it happens, because I know that that's when it is, but it just catches me off guard, and you just hear a big, loud bang, like somebody slamming a door or something's fallen on the floor. And you just jump, and that's something that happens all the time.
Now, my first investigation there, and the reason that I asked you to tell about that, I did not hear, and at that time there was a grandfather clock right inside that entry door.
Uh-huh.
I set my recorder on it. I did not hear the bang, but I did hear a female between the 9:15 and 9:30 cry. And I did capture it on recorder. I didn't hear the gunshot or the bang, but I did hear the female cry.
Mm-hmm.
As though, you know, somebody died. It was just a loud, wailing cry. So it is truly a magnificent location. Of all the thousands of people that went through that location, there's no telling how many have lingered there. They definitely need our respect. They definitely need acknowledgement. So if you have the chance, ladies and gentlemen, go to Gordonsville, Virginia. Check out the Exchange Hotel. It's a magnificent location.
Yeah, it's definitely a place that I'm going to have to get to this year. So,
yeah, I can't wait to have you out.
If it is October 4th, Then yeah, that's I'm blocking schedule off. I'm gonna let work know ahead of time and say, hey, I can't be there.
Hey, Angel, I hate to, like, I don't know, take advantage of a location or somebody that runs it. Can Matt and I spend the night there and, like, sleep in the beds and everything else?
Say that again. I'm sorry. All my power just went out. I'm sorry. There's a terrible storm here.
Damn,
I'm
it.
Sitting in pitch dark.
Ooh. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, listen closely. When she talks, do we hear anything in the background? Are there spirits around her?
Yeah, I'm in the basement of my house, and I have lots of spirits here. I bring them home all the time. When I left Saturday night after the RIP files were there, I felt something kick the back of my seat as I'm driving down the road, and there's nothing in my back seat. It was just like when you have a child in a car seat, and they're kicking the back of the seat while you're driving down the road. That's what it felt like. And I said, okay, I know you're there. When I get home, you better stay right here in the vehicle because I don't want you in the house.
All right, now, Matt, this is where, Angel, you might hate me. You are an intuitive and a medium,
uh-huh.
Right?
Yep.
Okay. I hate
and I think that's why I was drawn there. And I think that's why I'm there now, because they know that I'm a beacon of light. They can talk to me. They can communicate with me.
Oh, thank you so much. You just made my next statement so much easier. My next statement was going to be, you realize that you're a beacon. You're a light in the middle of darkness. And
uh-huh.
Everything comes to you. And it does the same to me. And Matt thought I was, you know, fucking nuts the first time that I did it to him.
Oh, people always think I'm nuts. And then when I tell them things and they look at me and they're like, how do you know that? It's like, I don't.
Oh, my God, it's so awesome. Yes, I don't know it. I just know what they tell me. And they're like,
uh-huh. You're the messenger. I'm the messenger.
Wait, hold on. Let me back up and clarify something.
I knew
Dennis has always been fucking nuts since I've first met him. And no, I didn't think any differently of you when you did a reading for me. I just sat back and said, holy shit, yeah. Yeah, you're right.
No. The difference between what I can do and what Angel can do, she can contact people. I look at and draw energy from locations. If you have a person around you, which, by the way, Angel, I want you to, you and I will talk tomorrow. I draw locations. She draws people. Am I right?
Oh, yeah.
Angel?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I can remote view a location, and I can talk to the energies that are at that location. And Lyle can attest to this. Lyle Lotz over at Twisted Paranormal Society has watched me do it. I did a remote view for him. He mentioned that he had an investigation coming, and I just started getting snap pictures.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty intense. Some of the pictures that I got were intense. Everything that I got and passed on to him was dead on, according to him and the notes that he took. But you have the ability that I don't have in the fact that you can actually read people.
Well,
is that
necessarily,
right?
I can't necessarily read people. It's when they have a loved one or somebody that's close to them that's passed over. If they present themselves to me and give me their name, I can discern who they go to and, you know, give them that message. I can't read that person. I can't say, you know, hey, you're going to die in 10 years or something like that. I can't do that. I can only talk to dead people.
But
I'm also not going
to
bring up a name.
Around them.
Well, what I'm getting at is I'm not going to bring up a name to where you got punched in the nose like Dennis did.
Yeah. Angel, what he's asking is, do you sense anybody around him?
That's not what I was asking.
Who is... Well...
No, and that's another misconception. Everybody thinks that mediums are always on. You're not like a light switch. It's whenever that person that's on the other side wants to communicate, they come through. I can't go up to somebody and say, oh, your great aunt Gladys is beside you. I can't do that. If she does have a relative that has passed and wants to talk to me, they present themselves to me, but I can't do any hocus pocus to make a dead person come through. So, you know, it's pretty much not a science to it, but I can be in the grocery store and see somebody walking and somebody that's one of their, you know, loved ones or family members or whatever is with them. And they'll come up to me and say, hey, you know, and tell me what their name is and, you know, what they want to tell this person. That's how it happens for me. And, you know, I get people that come through the museum all the time, and I'll see people around them, and sometimes I say stuff and sometimes I don't. It just depends on that person's personality, because I'm not as bold as, like, you know, this, you know, that Teresa Caputo lady on TV, she'll just walk right up and just tell you. Me, I kind of am leery, and sometimes I'll say, you know, hey, do you have a loved one that passed over by the name of blah, blah, blah? And, you know, sometimes they're receptive, and then other people, I'm just like, I'm not even going to go there.
Well, see, I was kind of nervous about bringing up the fact that you have this ability. But thank you for diving in, you know, chin deep.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of misconceptions out there. Everybody thinks that, you know, if you can talk to, you know, dead people, that you can tell the future, or you can, you know, you have this mystique things that you can do. You can't. I know I can't.
Oh.
I don't have all the
answers.
What
are the lottery numbers? Yeah.
Right, that's another thing. Or something's going to happen. Well, why didn't you foretell that? I just can't. I don't know how I have it. I don't know how it comes through. It just does. It makes no sense to me. You know, I have people, you know, I had this guy that came in the museum, and he's having a conversation, and his grandma's standing beside him, and she's just aggravating the crap out of me. You need to tell him I'm here. Tell him. Give me her name and everything. And, you know, I was brave enough that night, and I said, excuse me, do you have a loved one that passed over by the name of Gertrude? And he's just like, what? How did you know that? And
that was the night I was there for the investigation. I saw you do that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then another lady that was there the week before you were there, I couldn't figure out what person it was with, because sometimes they tell you exactly and sometimes they don't, but I'm just like, I even went to Tana and said, if anybody in your group has a loved one named Lacey that's passed over, let me know, because they're coming through. And so I'm, you know, narrowing down all the people until I found the people and the person who had that tie, that connection. So, you know, it's a puzzle for me. It comes, but I don't know it all. I got to you'll honor it and say it. And when I say it, the people make sense of it. So, and they're like, oh, yeah, that was my blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, okay, now it makes sense.
Yeah, it's amazing some of the things that we get that make, and I say we because I also do the same thing. But it's amazing what we get from the other side that we don't understand jack shit about it. I can have a woman run up to me and go, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. You can talk to my son, Bubby, and please tell him that I, even though I'm dead, I'm still following him. And I'm like, okay, I don't know Bubby. But they give me a picture of him, and I may see him like the next day, just
right.
Randomly in Home Depot or whatever, and I look at him and I went, and I went. Okay, so it's a true happening. I just want you to know that your mom came to me last night and told me that she's with you every day. Bubby, don't think I'm strange. And you watch their jaw drop and their face goes white. And they're like, how the fuck did you know? It is what it is. But, Angel, I have to tell you this. In chat, I have from Lyle, please pass on to Angel that we love working with her and can't wait for our next public tour / investigation July 18th. We will do anything she asked us to help out with. She is the beacon of light that helped Tana on the night of our investigation when she had someone take control of her. So you saved that girl, which Tana is an absolute sweetheart. The trouble is she doesn't know that she herself is a beacon.
She is. She's scared of it.
Well, she doesn't like it. Freaks her out. I actually talked to her the weekend after, and she's scared of it. But Tana
is
a beacon.
She's got a lot of fear. A lot of people do because you don't know how to control it.
No, it's very hard to control. But I spent the next weekend, I spent about an hour or so talking to Tana and telling her how to dim her light down so she wasn't, well, the human eye can see a single candle light in a 10-acre field. The trouble is spirit can see a single candlelight in a millennial field. If you are any sort of
still,
a light.
Still speculation.
No, I'm convinced, brother. You followed me. You listened to me and you learned through me from what I could do. From didn't know I could do it to it happened. You know as well as I do, shit goes on overnight, instantly.
Yeah, I chose not to take that path.
Yeah, and I gave you kudos on that. Now, Angel, Matt had an instance where I tested him. I got my ass royally chewed, by the way.
So did I.
It turns out that you don't test. You either say open the door or close the door. But, you know, I got my ass ripped. So, Angel, when did you know that you could talk to spirit? How old were you?
Well, I knew from the age of 3 that I had these people that I talked to. But at 3, you're not consciously aware that they're real or if they're not. But I think the age that I was, where I knew, was probably 15. This was like, you know, this is just in your face. They're telling me things. They're telling me to tell other people things. And nobody else around me sees it. I think that's about 15. And every single house that I've ever lived in, they're there. And, I mean, what's the likelihood of somebody living in a haunted house every place that they've ever lived? So that's when I, you know, it kind of hit me, and I was like, wait a minute. I can see these people and nobody else can, and I can talk to them. So that's probably when it hit me.
Hey, Angel, don't mean to cut the conversation off. We have about 5 minutes left of actual airtime. So if you have any plugs or anything you want to throw up, feel free.
Yeah. Any of your listeners, check out the Exchange Hotel website. It's hgiexchange.org. And if you would like to do a night tour, check out our website, which is nighttour@exchangehotel.weebly.com. And you can always call the hotel at any time, set up a night tour, or find out any information that you need from me. The phone number is 540-832-2944. We're open every single day of the week from 10 to 4 and Sundays from 1 to 4.
Awesome. Now, Angel, don't hang up. We're going to announce the end of the show, but it will go into archive, which means we can still talk, and you and Matt and myself will still talk, but those that pull up the podcast can hear it. But our live listeners, which, by the way, if you want to listen, catch the rest of this show, because it's going to be awesome. Trust me. We have questions for Angel that might blow your mind. But 323-580-5703. Make sure to call in. Just sit on the board. Do not push 1. Because, well, you can actually push 1 if you want to talk to us. But sit on the board. 323-580-5703. But, Angel, don't hang up. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you so much for joining Matt and myself for another episode of Full Spectrum Radio. You can catch Matt and myself at CPR Matt and CPR Dennis at the both Facebook and Twitter. You can also find us on Chicagoland Paranormal Researchers at .com and the Facebook. So make sure. Catch up with us. Listen to this. It's well worth it. Now, Angel.
Thank you so much for having me on tonight, too.
Oh, it's been a blast. But don't hang up, because we got more questions, even if we roll into archive. So, about the age of 3, you realized that you could talk to spirit?
Well, when I was at age 3, I don't think I realized what that was. I just knew that I had people that I talked to that my parents thought were imaginary friends, and they weren't imaginary to me. They were very real to me.
Okay. Now, when did you realize that you had, like, spirit friends or people that you talked to that were actually passed over.
When did I relapse?
Yeah.
When I was like 15 years old, I lived in an old two-story house that was built in 1850. And in the middle of the night, I was in my bed, and I woke up, and there was a man at the foot of my bed who told me I had to get out. Hurry, hurry. There's fire. We got to get out. And didn't know what the heck she was talking about. And she just kept coming to the room every night and telling me the same thing. And did the research, went to the courthouse, talked to neighbors, found out that the house that was next door actually burnt down. There were three children, a husband and a wife, that perished in the fire.
Wow.
And that's when I had that awakening, like, okay, that makes sense now.
I didn't
know what that meant at the time. I was like, what the heck is she talking about? Where's the fire? There's no fire.
Yeah, now I understand why she's coming at me. Now, do you... in your personal residence, where you live now, do you have spirit there? Can you talk to them?
Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. It just depends.
So you do have spirit in your personal residence.
Mm-hmm.
So what changes sometimes I do, sometimes I don't? Is it
a weather transient thing?
They're what?
Say that again? The transient. Sometimes they come through and sometimes they're not here. It just depends.
Okay.
It's not like my house is haunted by a spirit that has lived here before. It's just spirits that have either came home with me from different locations. Else.
Hey, Matt.
Yes?
Tag that audio. Did you hear the voice in the background?
I did not.
Okay. There was a voice in the background. And Angel, I don't want you to get upset, but there was a voice in the background, and we've had it many times. I'm assuming you're talking to us on your cell phone.
I am. Mm-hmm.
Okay. One thing that I've done in the past, I've, you know, impromptu visit to here or there. I use my phone as a recording device, and I do an impromptu EVP. Did you not hear the voice that was right behind you?
When? Just now?
Yeah, you were answering, talking about what's in your own home, and I could hear a male voice. And I will go back and I'll pull it off the board, because the board records everything that is going on right now.
Okay, well, let me just say, I'm sitting in the pitch dark downstairs in my basement, and I have all of my family members upstairs in the kitchen right above me. So you could have very well picked up one of them. I have probably five or six guys up there.
Okay.
My friends over, my husband, my uncle, my cousin. I have family in from Pennsylvania this week, so you could have very well picked them up, because I'm not sensing anything around me in here.
I didn't mean to freak you out, but it was just strange. Just out of nowhere, I haven't heard anything behind you before. But all of a sudden, I got that one. We actually interviewed a couple of authors. Matt, do you remember the names?
There was
Brulé
and Karen Van Tammen.
Right, Karen Van Tammen. We had the last 45 minutes. We were all talking. Where we're at right now, where it goes into archive, it gets recorded, but it doesn't broadcast live. And the four of us were talking, and we kept hearing a male voice talking that we knew wasn't one of us.
Right.
So we actually had interaction, I think, that night with Spirit. Now, I told you when I was there 2 weeks ago that you have one that follows you.
Mm-hmm. That's my spirit guide.
Well, that's awesome. And if you pick up on who my spirit guides are, because they don't talk to me. They just throw me information.
No, just ask them to come forward and honor themselves. And if they can't come to you while you're conscious, ask them to come to you in your dreams.
Okay.
So that's only the last time you were conscious.
Wait, sober conscious or not sober conscious? Because
absolutely
that's a huge bearing.
Yeah, you don't want to be altered when you're trying to speak to spirit. That's not a good thing.
And that's never going to happen. No, I'm kidding. I do drink a great deal. I'm not going to lie. But here's what I've figured out. When I have my best remote views and when I interact with spirit the most is when I'm wide awake, but I'm intoxicated. So I open myself up more to them at that point in time. Yeah, that didn't sound good at all.
No, because I've never heard that before.
Dennis is the drunk whisperer.
Dennis is the drunk whisperer. That question, that makes me, is that really real?
No, that did not sound good at all. When I don't drink, which, you know, I don't drink every day, don't get it wrong. When I don't drink and I have a friend call me and go, hey, what's going on around me? I don't get any feeling. When I do drink and a friend calls me, I can peg what's going on around them and I can tell them exactly what's happening. Because I'm more susceptible to it. I open up more to it. I don't know why I can do what I do. Matt, what have I done for you? A quick synopsis. Don't go into all full details. What have I done for you?
A lot.
Okay, let's get more detailed than that.
You said no details.
Exactly.
No,
you asked for
I asked for that.
No, I mean you've pegged times, you pegged people's names that you wouldn't have known. I mean you pegged details and Angel. The one thing is, anytime that I've ever asked Dennis to do anything, as far as reading goes. I don't feed him anything at all.
Right.
I say, here's a name, what do you get? I don't agree with stuff he's saying that he can, you know, elaborate off of that. I just let him do his thing with no feeder involved whatsoever.
Right.
My trouble is I have an issue opening myself up to receive, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
When Lila and I first talked, and I did a remote for Lila, the first time ever, he was doing the event down at the Paracon at the Boxwoods.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, my team has an event or an investigation coming up. And I started throwing everything at it. I mean, I saw the location. I told him what spirits he's going to interact, where they're at in the building. All of these things. My first question to him was actually, did you find the cemetery? When you look at the house, it's way off to the right. And I was dead on. But
right.
I saw the pictures.
Now, I know we all met for dinner one night. They were coming to the exchange for an investigation. And we all met at a Mexican restaurant. We're sitting around talking, and he told me that they had an investigation at a private residence. And all of a sudden, stuff started flooding into me as well, and I said, you got to check out the barn. And he said, but you know there was a barn. I said, I don't know, but you just got to check out the barn. And I don't know where that information came from. You know, I didn't have a specific spirit that told me that. But later, after they did do the investigation, he said, you were right. There was a lot going on in the barn. He said, we want to take you back there.
Was that?
And that's just how you receive it. It's just, you just don't know.
Was Eagle in the name of the location?
Yes, yes.
Okay. So yes. You and I both tuned in because I told him the barn is very hot.
Mm-hmm.
So you and I both.
Yeah, and he hadn't told
location.
Me anything. He hadn't told me anything about the location other than, Angel, we're getting ready to start a private investigation for a private residence. And then I just blurted right in and said, you got to check out the barn. He just looked at
me,
how do you know there's a barn? I said, I don't know.
Well, that same exact location, which they have made public, was Mount Eagle Farms. They have made it public so I can speak about it. It was amazing. I mean, what I saw, I told him what spirits he would interact with in what area of the house.
Mm-hmm.
I met three in the house, which, by the way, Doc is an asshole. And he made it known. We did an SB7 session in Doc's room. And I asked Doc, so for those that weren't here when I came a couple of weeks ago, which I went there, like, energy-wise during my remote, I had never been to this location. I had no flipping clue where it was at. But I said, for those that weren't here with me a few weeks ago, can you tell them now what you told me then? And I've got a Class A EVP that says, fuck off.
Oh,
and
goodness.
Then the SB7 chimed in and goes, fuck you.
Oh, my gosh.
But what
that's because they know Dennis. That's all
they speak his language.
But what when I did my remote view was get the fuck out. As soon as I walked into that room, I mean, I crossed the threshold and I saw this man run at me, and I described him to Lyle. And what I didn't know was the homeowner is the third generation owner of the property, and this mm-hmm. was her grandfather. And I described him to a T, right down to the alcohol on his breath. I smelled liquor in his breath.
Before you go any further, don't say anything else about it, because I'm supposed to be going back with them, and I like to go without knowing a thing about anything. Yeah.
Sorry.
I always go in with no history, anything, because I love to get the validation. So.
And that's what I do. I gave him all my information. This is everything that I pick up. Don't tell me shit.
Yep, that's the way I always go in. I like to go in blind, as I call it.
Yeah. Now, I've spoken with used to be Bishop Christina Wraith many times. Mm-hmm. And she would go into locations blindfolded, and she could tell you, like she would hover her hand and go, there's a piano here. I see a young man playing a piano right here. And she would be hovering her hand above a piano. I absolutely love her. She is awesome. I love her talent. I love her abilities. And have that same ability.
Right. But you do have an ability, and you have a wonderful gift, and it's awesome that you're honoring it.
Well,
one of the best stories.
You,
real quick, one of the best stories from Christina was she was walking with David Scott and John Stevens and a lot of their group. And she was blindfolded. They walked into the Casa, what the hell was it? It was the one that Paranormal Cops did in Chicago. It was the rim shop that used to be, like, something back in the 30s and 40s. I think it was a speakeasy. But the girl who was walking her through had her, and she was completely blindfolded. The whole car ride to there, the whole walkthrough during there, and the whole car ride out of there, she is blindfolded, so she never knew where she was. But she was walking through, the girl had her arm around her arm, kind of guiding her through, and Christina goes, watch out, you're going to trip. And the girl goes, what? And then face planted. Because there was a step stool that was right in front of the girl, and she was paying attention to what Christina was saying and not where she was walking.
Right.
So, yeah, carefully you're going to trip,
amazing.
And complete face plant, just face to ground, like right after she said that.
Yeah, that's amazing, and that's validation for her. She was probably like, awesome.
She was laughing her ass off. Yeah. The girl was okay. But yeah, she was laughing her ass off. She goes, see, I told you. But yeah, and laughing, ha-ha, that was a lot of validation for me.
Oh, yeah. And everybody I know that has any type of sensitivity always craves that. You always want to make sure that you're dead on.
You don't want to look like a dumbass.
Right.
Or a crazy person.
Guys, My phone is beeping because I've only got 10% of battery. I've run the battery all the way down talking to y'all. So I'm going to have to cut it short and what a night.
Right. I have no option. Over your left shoulder, I see you on a blue couch or like turquoise couch, but over your left shoulder is an older man with a lot of, he doesn't have a beard, but he has a lot of facial growth. He follows you. And, yes, you.
I am sitting on a couch. It's not turquoise, though.
Well, it's kind of a bluish color.
Well, it's a multicolor, but that's one of the colors that's in it.
I see turquoise, dark blue. Not dark blue, but turquoise. But he's over your left shoulder, and he stands by you. Uncle, he has facial growth. He's about 5'7", 5'8", kind of stocky build. Not muscle, but he's heavy set. And he follows you pretty much everywhere. I'm not sure if he's not related, but he stands over you and he watches you and he follows you. He has a kind of dense beard growth, but not a real beard.
And he's not a relative?
No.
Okay.
I think he's a pickup. But he's over your left shoulder right now. So where are you at on the couch? Is the left shoulder vacant? Like
yes.
There's no couch past your left shoulder?
There is couch, but I'm sitting up on the arm of the couch, and the whole rest of the couch is empty. My right shoulder is at my sliding glass door, and my left shoulder is wide open.
Okay. That's where he's standing. He's there
Hi.
As a guardian.
Hi.
He,
sorry.
He's there as a guardian. He watches over you, and I'm not sure why. He's made himself known to you many times. He bumps into shit as you walk through. You'll walk through the
we've
doorway.
Also
you'll
captured,
hear him.
We've captured a picture of him here in my full-length mirror in my bedroom. My son came down here and took a selfie of himself in front of my full view mirror, and he was standing in the hallway behind him.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, so I know exactly who you're talking about.
Well, he's harmless, so I don't I don't want to cross him over. But he's there just to protect you, and I see him over your left shoulder. And he stays over your left shoulder. Oliver, he's Oliver.
It's funny you say that, that's my cat's name.
but he stays behind you, and he always stays off to the left.
Okay.
Welcome to my world. I know you do it too, and if you see anything with me, by all means, please call me. Text me.
Oh, I will.
Something.
I absolutely will.
I know I have two behind me. One is Jackass. His goal is to fuck with me. Hey, I'm still on the phone.
Oh, wait, yeah, you're in my left ear. Son of a bitch, and your goal is to fuck with me.
What?
Yeah. So, Angel, know that what is following you is a good guy. He actually stands up to the negatives that try to follow you. So you'll feel confrontation like behind you, like it's not you, but you'll feel a fight going on behind you, and that's him chasing them away. I don't know if that makes sense, but you'll feel a fight, but I ain't got nothing to do with you.
So he's my protector.
Yes. He stays with you 24/7. And he's a rather big guy. I see him at like maybe 6'3", 6'4". He's a rather large guy, and he's always, always on your left.
Okay.
His name is Oliver. He has a start growth of a beard.
What color hair?
Gray. And I'm trying to look at it now and trying to figure out how to describe it. He has, like, the middle of his head is bald, but he has hair on the sides.
Mm-hmm.
He's in denim pants. He's got suspenders on. Gray, blue, but they're really weird. They're a bright gray blue, stand out against the face.
Mhm.
But
and this is somebody that has passed over, that was an actual human and not a guardian.
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
he's actually a human.
He's actually a human. I get, like I said at the very beginning of this, he's uncle or something like that. But he stays behind you at all times. But he has the denim overalls or, I don't know, suspender things. He's tall, he's thin. I see his face kind of shrunken in. He has the blue-gray eyes. He was very thin on the top, but the sides of his hair grew down like, I guess you'd call it a reverse mohawk.
Mm-hmm.
Matt, what did you call it when you made that haircut last week? Matt.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember what I called it.
The long hair down the sides, but blank in the middle. That's what I see.
A reverse mohawk?
Yeah, we'll stick with that. Angel, he farms. He was... He worked the land.
That's
hey, Dennis, she's gone. Her phone probably died.
All right. But, yeah, well, I was reading what I saw. So, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to close the episode.
You ready? This has been another evening of Full Spectrum Radio. I am CPR Matt.
And I am absolutely fucking crazy, CPR Dennis.
And we thank everybody for listening this evening. And hope you have a happy and safe 4th of July. Go our country. And we will catch you next Wednesday. Same time, same place.
Be safe, everybody.
Can't make